What if one conversation could save a life? What if one new process or new product could save a patient from surgical harm? Broadcasting from a hospital basement near you, you are listening to the Beyond Clean podcast, the global voice of sterile processing. Each week we spotlight the best practices, products and people from around the world who are disrupting our profession and helping you fight dirty. Every instrument, every time. Join us as we have the kinds of conversation that matter and give our industry the kind of voice that it deserves. Nyt on aika mennä puhdastakin puhtaammaksi. And now it's time to go beyond clean.
This week on Beyond Clean, we speak with Kathy Mazza, Clinical Director of Sales at Sklar Instruments. Kathy has over 20 years of experience in healthcare, both as a clinician and in a sales capacity. Her clinical experience includes roles as a certified surgical technologist and materials manager. As a vendor in healthcare, her positions have always entailed working with surgical instruments and calling on sterile processing and the operating room. Over the years, she has contributed to articles in Healthcare Purchasing News magazine and has spoken at various ISHM educational conferences and guest lectured for CS certification programs. Hank, I'm really excited to talk with Kathy. She and I work in a very similar market, although we're now both very much national in our presence. Being on the East Coast in the Philadelphia area, we have run similar circles for many years, and I know she was a big help at the Beyond Clean panel discussion event at the ISHM annual conference. So it's nice to have her on the show today.
Yeah, Justin, I am a huge fan of single-use instruments. That may sound a little weird coming from a lifetime sterile processing professional, but I love them. And I'm excited to hear Kathy make the case tonight for single-use instruments, in particular, a conversion philosophy of when do you know if a clinic should be going into single-use, an ancillary department should be transferring into single use, or at least, you know, some percentage of single use. So those are the types of questions that I really want to target Kathy with tonight, and I know that she'll do a great job with them.
HealthMark has intelligent solutions for your cleaning verification program, including products to measure water temperature, water quality, cleaning efficacy, and to directly test for residual soil left on instruments. Find your tools for cleaning verification at hmark.com. There you will learn about our TOSI and SonoCheck that test the performance of mechanical washers as recommended in sterilization standards guidelines. Other products like CartWash Check test for mechanical efficiency and target temperature. The ProCheck 2 can detect residual protein to a very low level. Go to hmark.com today for all of your cleaning verification testing needs. It's 2023 and there's big news for IST, a closed warning letter, a new product launch, and a 10-year anniversary. OneTray IST has a lot to celebrate this year. OneTray's 2006 cleared 48-hour storage claim was acknowledged by the FDA, and the company is pushing forward, offering the total solution for reprocessing. OneTray maximizes reprocessing time. EasyTracks adds flexibility with instrument organization, and their upcoming product, OneCart, a sealed case cart with a smaller footprint and a perfect option for off-site sterilization, completes the total solution. Experience a year of efficiency with OneTray. For more information on the closure of the warning letter, visit OneTray.com/FDA warning letter. That's OneTray.com/FDA warning letter. Otherwise, you can reach out to the company by calling 937-619-0138 or visit OneTray.com/contact.
Beyond Clean. Joining us now is Kathy Mazza, Clinical Director of Sales at Sklar Instruments. And Kathy, you and I have known each other for a while working in the same market, and I know you were a big help at the Beyond Clean panel discussion at Isham. You donated some ribbon retractors that we then had etched with the likenesses of our three panelists. So I wanted to start off by just saying thank you for supporting our first ever event.
Well, thank you, Justin. It was a pleasure. And thank you so much for having me tonight on the discussion. And it is refreshing. You and I have known each other for many, many years. And we've always worked in a competitive atmosphere. So it's kind of fun to be doing a project together, finally, after all these years.
It's good to be collaborating, no doubt. And that just, for anybody who has been in the industry a short amount of time, there's a lesson in that, that you just never know who you're going to wind up working with or working for, et cetera. And the industry is a small one at that. And I agree. I'm happy to be collaborating. And, you know, specifically, I think we're going to have you talk a lot about, you know, your role at Sklar Instruments. But tonight, going to be talking about single-use or disposable instruments. I thought you could start by just giving us some of the characteristics of a single-use instrument.
Sure. Justin, first of all, it seems to be a real-time phenomenon that is happening in healthcare right now where there is a push to single-use handheld instrumentation. And although they are still metal instruments, there are some characteristics that will most definitely differentiate them from a higher end reusable instrument that you see, handheld instrument you see in the operating room. The finish of them, the country of origin, the weight of the instrument, and then any single-use symbols that are etched on there will help you. So typically disposable instruments have a mirror finish. OR grade instruments that you use in the operating room suite are a satin finish so that they're not reflective from the lights during a procedure. But the instruments that are used in a single-use setting in a clinic environment or in an urgent care will typically have that mirror finish to it. So that is one way at a quick glance to differentiate what type of instrument you have in your hand. Secondly, disposable instruments should have Pakistan stamped on them. The country of origin is stamped on all handheld surgical instruments. Seeing the word Germany stamped onto your instrument indicates that it's a OR grade steel made in Germany and therefore a reusable instrument. This is applicable across the board except if instruments are made in the United States. The laws require that if a operating room instrument is made in the United States, there's no country of origin that needs to be stamped on it. Most of the single-use handheld instruments are made in Pakistan, so you can certainly look to see the word Pakistan written on the side of the instrument. Third, the weight of an instrument will also help identify as to whether or not it is a single-use or a reusable. Again, instrumentation that is used in the operating room setting typically has a heavier weight to it than the stainless steel single-use instrument that you use in a clinic setting or in an urgent care. Something that our company is doing to assist the end users in a quick identification is that we are starting to stamp the universal symbol for single use on instruments. And that is denoted by a number 2 that has a line through it, and it's set inside of a circle. We put those on a spot on the instrument that is easily seen. So we're doing this with our Peterson speculums. We're doing them with disposable ophthalmic instruments. Those instruments actually have a heavier weight to them and a matted finish to them. So it becomes a little bit more difficult to identify whether or not that is a disposable instrument. So because of that, we are putting the universal single-use sign on those instruments. We also have higher-end kits like CJD kits that are disposable, diagnostic CJD kits, and even C-section trays of instruments that are being used as a disposable set that we must mark that single-use sign on to help differentiate.
Yeah, those symbols, Kathy, are so critical. I know the sterile processing tech, especially as you're first getting started, like you went over, you know, those clear differentiators, the weight and the finish. But if you're brand new and you can't even tell the difference between one instrument pattern and another, it can be difficult to distinguish those things. So if it's clear in writing there, you know, Pakistan, or definitely if you have that universal symbol like you're talking about, that can be extremely helpful. I wanted to move us, I guess, you know, a little farther down the road here and just talk, you know, potential or prime candidates for converting. In sterile processing, oftentimes when you hear the word single use, it kind of has a negative connotation. I think that is because we know those instruments shouldn't be coming back to us for reprocessing. But in the industry at large, there is great potential for changing the practice from reusable and all the costs that's involved in that, you know, to the single-use disposable. So can you kind of outline maybe for us who those prime conversion candidates are?
Certainly. So to your point, here in the United States, the acceptable practice for the operating room are those German-made instruments. I will tell you that in Canada, for example, they will use an instrument that is stamped Pakistan as a reusable in the operating room. And this is where the water gets a little muddy, because we even carry this line of instruments. There are lines of instruments that are Japanese steel but finished in Pakistan. So they technically can be a reusable item because it is still stainless steel. You just follow the policies and procedures of your facility on what you use. But I will tell you that candidates for conversion, and what we're seeing in the industry, is that the non-acute settings such as urgent cares, off-site clinics that are owned by a hospital network will make the conversion to disposable. We also will see conversions to disposables in emergency room departments, women's health clinics, and floors, very, very big in the forefront of converting to disposables, and the ENT centers and floors within a hospital as well. They're the major players that we're seeing move to disposables. And what is happening is over the last couple of years, health systems are buying up all of the physician practices. They're opening urgent care facilities within their IDN, and they're also building clinics or buying clinic spaces as well that is falling under that IDN name. When that happens, these clinic spaces and non-acute spaces fall under Joint Commission regulations as part of the IDN. So oftentimes those areas do not have the setup, as we know, in sterile processing, which is, you know, the standard of decontam, a prep and pack, sterilization records. All of these processes are not being followed or not having the space to do them. And those spaces are prime candidates to make a conversion to disposables as well.
Kathy, kind of along those lines, can you give us an idea of the difference between a full conversion and a partial conversion, what that would look like, or if that's even possible?
Well, the emergency room department will do a partial conversion, meaning they will have some smaller kits, smaller instrument sets, such as a removing of suture kit or a laceration kit, where there's a couple hemostats on there. There are a couple of needle drivers on there. These are typically items that will walk away from an emergency department. So those are the types of procedure trays that will be moved to a disposable. And then things like maybe instrumentation that you use to insert chest tubes, those types of emergency equipment will remain a reusable item. So there are departments that kind of hybrid, where they'll take a look at instruments that continue to be missing and gone and make those a conversion to disposable and keep their higher end instruments. We also see that, as I had said, in the women's clinic, basic procedure trays will be converted to a disposable. Again, things that may be placenta forceps that have hemostats on them. And then if you need a higher end biopsy punch, that will remain a reusable instrument. So we do see them hybrid across the board. Now, that is what is causing also issues, again, in sterile processing, is that the clinicians that are using these instruments in these areas maybe are not differentiating between what needs to be disposable and what's reusable. So everything will come into the sterile processing department, or everything will get thrown away. So again, because this is something relatively new in healthcare that we're seeing happen, we're assisting the clinicians in assessing what their usage habits are, who's touching the instruments, and then kind of making the decision at that point as to what is the direction that they need to go that best suits them.
Yeah, great points there. It really does come to that clinician after the point of use, you know, determining where that instrument goes. And in one sense, you can't fault them if there is that hybrid model and they're using, you know, multiple types of instruments in one procedural setting. As that comes back then, you know, going back again to the education, that's where that burden is really set on the part of sterile processing technicians to route those items a direct way so that they don't end up back in a reusable tray if they are single use. So on that topic then, on education, you know, with this larger topic or the case for single use, if you will, and again, understanding that a full conversion, especially for the OR, is really out of sight probably, but in terms of these clinics, you know, can you speak to the true costs that you would be saving converting from what may be a completely reusable inventory at the clinic setting to either a partial or hybrid single-use disposable option, and the cost for education that you would be saving in addition to the overall reprocessing costs?
Sure. So the reprocessing costs vary if you're looking to benchmark what the cost of reprocessing an instrument is. However, the American Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology published an article in 2016, and they guesstimated the cost, or they estimated the cost of reprocessing one instrument at $3 an instrument. Now, that does take into consideration the cost of educating staff. Oftentimes in the clinic spaces, there is transportation that needs to take place to get the instruments back and forth. The difficulty in that, there are also some soft costs in trying to figure out what the cost of that instrument is. So you can take a look at how many seconds it takes or how many minutes it takes to process that instrument and quantify that by the hourly cost. And then you can break down your detergents and break down your tape and break down your packaging. So there's all of that. But then there's also, as you had mentioned, the cost of continuing education for your off-sites. There is the cost of updating all the educational materials. There's the cost of having people write the policies and procedures to follow. So it's a lot more labor intense to stay compliant on those off sites. Also, this is a phenomenon that is being driven by infection prevention, because there's such a focus on healthcare acquired infections and how that relates to what the center and the procedure is getting reimbursed for. Cross-contamination is often traced back to surgical instrumentation. So infection prevention is driving this as well, to say, you know what, the only way we can guarantee we're not going to get cross-contamination is by moving to a disposable. Also, with Joint Commission coming in, as I'd mentioned before, that is a focus to look at these off-site spaces that have been acquired by the hospital networks. And oftentimes facilities are kind of getting caught in a reactive situation where they're getting cited and fined, and then they're running to try to make it right, and then they don't have the time and the folks available to do all of the education and to put these policies and procedures in place. So if I'm looking at, again, you know, as I go through material, the $3 an instrument is what seems to keep cropping up. If you're looking at the average cost of a disposable instrument, you're around that between $2.50 and $2.50 and $3.50 per instrument. So it's either a small cost savings or it becomes cost neutral. The bigger picture here is looking at it from system-wide to make sure that there's no cross-contamination and no infection, and that those folks in those off-sites are not taking time away from patient care to process instruments if they're doing it there on-site. Does that kind of answer your question in a roundabout way? It's not an exact science yet.
No, that's great information. And I would imagine that also comes into play when we talk about decreasing liability and, you know, chemical hazards associated with reprocessing, you know, those figure into that conversion as well?
Yeah, well, so the cost of the chemicals, I mean, literally there is a list of items that go into it. So it's the cost of the drapes, the wraps, the tape, the pans, the chemicals, the biological indicators, the incubator, the logs, the ordering, the amount of time and incremental cost that goes into it is staggering. As we all know, in that sterile processing arena, it takes a village to get your instrument sets out and done. So when you factor in the utilization of those employees for the instrumentation for the OR, now they have these clinic spaces that are coming in that may or may not be complete. The sets when they come in may or may not be being transported via vehicles in. It's a little overwhelming. So those are the spaces where it just becomes so much easier. Now, the folks in those spaces that maybe have had their little tabletop sterilizers, oftentimes they're not even using the correct chemicals to disinfect and ready their instruments. Or they're washing them in the sink in the patient care room and sticking them in a Tyvek to go into the sterilizer. So it's also a control of the process. It's who's minding the store in these off sites, because it's not their forte, not their wheelhouse, is to do sterilization and reprocessing of instruments. So yes, the chemical piece of it plays in big when you convert to disposables, because then you don't have to keep those hazardous chemicals in these non-acute spaces. You have to take a look at the storage, the ordering. There's a ton of ancillary activities that go along with that. Becomes easier to put it, you know, to have it pre-sterilized in a single use.
It really harkens back to an episode from season one that we did with Don Williams, who is in the Northwest Territory out on the West Coast, and I believe it's for Kaiser, and his whole job is managing all these clinics for a large health system. And I know many of the customers that I've worked with, they feel like they've really got it together locally in the department, or even just the clinics that are on site local to the hospital are somewhat, you know, manageable. As soon as it goes off campus, that seems to be where the challenge is.
It is, Justin. You are 100% correct. I hear it over and over and over again. First of all, there's an infection preventionist position that I don't know if you all have noticed in your travels is cropping up. And this typically is someone from sterile processing, probably a manager, that is now moved into a space to take a look at all those off-site clinics. I see it again and again and again, and I talk to these folks, and they're like, I have 123 clinics. I have 200 clinics across three states. It's like herding cats to try to get them on the same page on their processes and education and what they're doing. Again, it's a very reactive situation right now where Joint Commission is coming in, and of course they're going to pick the clinic site that you haven't gotten to yet and take a look at what they're doing. So it's the initiative to just get those tabletop sterilizers out of those clinics and move them to a disposable is what we're seeing happening again and again. And these are big systems with lots and lots of clinics and physician offices that they own.
And with accountable care, they're becoming more responsible for those clinics and those offsite settings where that wasn't necessarily the case in the past. And I'm even thinking of like dental offices that aren't necessarily reprocessing instruments. In my hometown, we had a situation where they weren't even cleaning and sterilizing the instruments. They were just washing them and reusing them. And I know that ties to the education, and it's not exactly the wheelhouse that we're talking about right now, but it just emphasizes the education and how hard it is to bring it to all those several locations that are now wrapped up under one big health system. Before we wrap, one question, and it's really the elephant in the room, and definitely want to address this one before we close it out. But, you know, some people are going to say, especially with this big movement towards green environment and all those green initiatives, that the question's going to be, are single-use devices wasteful or bad for the environment? And so before we wrap, we've got to pose that one for you.
Sure. I'm happy that you did, because green initiatives are everywhere in healthcare. So currently, yes, they will go into your red bins for biohazards. Now, with that being said, there are companies out already that will recycle. Sharps, for example, does a recycling program. Daniels does a recycling program. Our company is actually looking, we're in talks with some folks to partner to make a completely green program for our disposables. Again, with my background and coming from healthcare, it's near and dear to my heart. It's something I'm passionate about. I have an issue with all that metal going into a landfill. So there are companies out there that will take them, they autoclave them, and then they take them to the metal smelting facility and they get recycled out. And you eat, and the facility can get documentation saying that, yes, they're green and this is the tonnage that they've removed. So that practice is already out there, and they are vendor neutral to those items, which is a good thing. And again, at SCLAR, we're looking to put that program in place, and hopefully we should have it in place by the middle of 2019, a completely green program.
I would think with the marking that you're doing, that that would make it a lot easier for people to identify. You know, you mentioned Daniels, and I even think of single-use device reprocessing and the bins and trying to make sure that the right instruments get in the right bin. I'm seeing this as just an even bigger advantage, that if we can mark these in some identifiable way, that it's only going to help facilities take advantage of that.
It will, and that, again, is another reason why we're moving toward marking those. We have a facility in the New England area that goes through a lot of women's healthy Peterson speculums, and they have reusables and disposables, and they're all metal. And they needed that help to differentiate between which ones need to go and which ones need to stay. So we're listening to our clinical customers and trying to be malleable enough to help them with their pain points right now. Because as I had mentioned over and over again, this is right now we're in a very reactive situation with our customers, where they kind of don't know until they get hit with Joint Commission coming in. And then it's, you know, a catch-all of, I need to change things. Even down to what we're seeing lately is the code carts. Something as simple as those McGill forceps to help for intubation, folks are getting cited because they're outdated. So they're moving toward just putting a disposable in there. So it's a lot of out-of-the-box thinking. You know, I had mentioned that C-section tray, and that was from a customer saying, I am in a remote area. We have no sterile processing facilities. The physicians come in to do these, and right now we're having to transport instruments out too far away to get reprocessed. So it's the need, it's being driven by infection prevention, but it's also taking a look at how healthcare is evolving and where we can help fill the need right now.
Kathy, excellent interview. And again, really nice to be collaborating. Want to thank you again for joining us for this episode.
Justin, it was my pleasure. And from the bottom of my heart, I'm so happy to be on the same side.
That was Kathy Mazza, Clinical Director of Sales at SCLAR Instruments. And I did reference the Dawn Williams episode. I would definitely encourage folks to go back and listen to that one as well. But as we all know, clinics can be difficult to manage, but especially off-site clinics. And I think Kathy really highlighted that. And she kind of put people at ease, I think, with the whole green initiative and being able to put a little bit of that wasteful concern to rest, at least hopefully. And I love the way that they're utilizing marking to make things a lot easier for their customers.
Yeah, Justin, I know that, you know, if you've ever been in a hospital, particularly ones in remote areas where they've got a lot of those clinics outlying in distant places, you know, that's one of those very consistent headaches that sterile processing managers will talk about, is trying to manage this inventory that comes in. It's been sitting for who knows how long before it even makes it to your facility. It's dried, it's rusted, and you're supposed to reprocess it and then make sure it doesn't get put into your own stock and it gets sent out to wherever it is. You know, it's just a mess. And so I'm always excited when I hear about a clinic or an outlying area or non-heavy use department switching over to the disposable single-use instruments. And so I really think Kathy did a really great job of helping us make the case for those who may have kind of a negative misconception about what these instruments do and what they're for, and really helping us make that argument for converting some of those facilities and those areas and clinics over to some disposable instruments.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for this week's show. As a reminder, you can help support us by subscribing to Beyond Clean on iTunes and Stitcher, and now also on Google Play and Spotify. Simply search for Beyond Clean Podcast. We'd certainly appreciate a rating and a review because your feedback is important to the show. And if you have any topics that you'd like us to cover on a future episode, or if you'd like to share a picture anonymously on our Instagram page, just send an email to info@beyondclean.net. On behalf of Hank, Mike, and myself, thank you for listening to another edition of Beyond Clean.